Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter. Hey watchers, it's Nyan and welcome back for some more strongly held, but ultimately pointless opinions on the Watch OK Please podcast. This week, Jason and Dan provide their somewhat well-rehearsed feedback for the show The Rehearsal, which is available on HBO Max. We end up doing some deeper dives into operations management, website updates, loss, Craigslist, dive bars and bartending, dating apps, and, of course, Vin Diesel. As a reminder, the proposed watch order was the first two episodes of Season 1. We are going to get very heavily into spoilers for a show that is best enjoyed without being spoiled at all. So I implore all of you, especially former guest of the show, Sherv, please at least give one episode a shot before listening to this feedback, if not both of the recommended episodes. If you're digging this podcast, please subscribe and rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or just give us a shout on our social media pages. If you have a show or movie you want us to watch, or just something you want us to randomly mention on air, leave us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. So, in summary, watch, listen, rate, and subscribe, please. All right, watchers, pull out your flowcharts and let's get into this. Hey, watchers, it's Nyan. Welcome back. We are here to talk about The Rehearsal because I made Dan and Jason watch this thing. It is currently on HBO Max, the entire first season. I had them watch episodes 1 and 2. So, guys, what did you think about The Rehearsal?
So before we start, I want to pitch an episode title for this.
Okay.
And I would call it Nyan for You.
I'm very open to this.
Okay, cool. It could be either one, actually. So it could be either one. So it's up to you. But yeah, that being said, full disclosure, I kind of wanted to know what happened with Angela. Spoilers here, once again. So I want to know what happened with Angela. So I finished the whole thing.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, it's so, wow. Jason, did you finish the whole thing?
I have not finished. I made it through episode 3.
Okay.
Nice.
And then I didn't have time to get to the rest. But I do think I will finish it. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I will keep any comments I have up to my episode 3 notes, I promise.
Well, I think episode 2, because that's the
We can talk a little bit more beyond that possibly if you want. But I think the gist up to episode 2, I mean, was different. You know, I think this is like when you think about reality TV, it's like it's all about the concept that it's unscripted and it's not planned. And I thought it was so interesting how, you know, they want to keep repeating everything to kind of come up with an optimized flow chart and workflow for everything for that situation, which I thought was really unique. And again, I had so much, so I had to go back and see. So what did he actually go to school for? And so I actually had to go back and look that up because I wanted to find out. I'm like, you know, who is that obsessed with, you know, with workflow that is not in operations management or something akin to that? That's what I wanted to know.
According to his Wikipedia page, he went to business school.
Yeah, that's exactly what, again, that kind of fulfilled my mindset. He must have taken an ops management course and, you know, had to learn all about that and whatnot. Or he maybe took a project management course and like learned about critical chain theory and all that kind of stuff, you know. You know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, but it was like, okay, he's like deep rooted in that. Wow.
So I'm going to give you my hot take on this show. It's not necessarily the best thing I've seen.
Yeah.
However, it is probably the most original thing I have seen in years.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't think of anything else that's quite like this. They're doing some weird stuff here. I don't know what's going on half the time. I don't know if this is allowed, but I just kept Googling things. I'm like, is this person real? Apparently, Cor Steele from the first episode is a real guy.
Yep.
He's actually a teacher. People are like on Reddit saying, no, I know this guy. Trish actually has a real blog called, I wrote it down, but I don't have my notes with me.
Cheap Chick in the City.
That's a real thing. And they really did create a real blog about Thrifty Boy.
Thrifty Boy.
And if you go to the Thrifty Boy blog, they have an announcement about how, due to cutbacks, he had to shut the blog down.
Oh, wow. Oh my God.
But like, wow. If you scroll it back, and so you can't like click on it and read the articles, because right. Presumably there are no articles, but there is like an actual announcement, and it'll scroll and show you, you know, hypothetical articles that they pretend wrote behind it.
Wow. Wow,
brilliant. I didn't look into that, but that's awesome. But what I did do was, and what I haven't told Dan and Jason, is that I thought this might come up, so I hired actors to play them and rehearse the feedback segment for the rehearsal. So this was covered, and yeah, I my response was just to say, yeah, I hadn't gotten that far into it, but that's cool. I'm glad you guys enjoyed it enough to at least go into it further, and it sounds like original enough to keep your interest.
So do we have to come up with a new section of the website now where we promote or mention tangential sites that are mentioned with series we watch? So we'll have, like, you know, Calico Cut Pants obviously has to be at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. And then yep. We have to have, you know, Thrifty Boy as number two, I guess, now.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I say we run with it. I guess let's start back with the first episode, because that really is quite self-contained. That first one, what were your impressions of it? Like, was there anything that kind of stood out for you with that in terms of the approach?
So definitely the first episode, you feel like you're just thrown in there. I got to say, I liked episode two, and for that matter, episode three, much more than I liked episode one.
Okay.
In fact, at the end of episode one, I was kind of worried I was going to have to give you some feedback of, boy, I didn't really love this show.
Right.
I liked what they were trying to do, but it kind of wasn't working. I feel in episode two, they figured out how to actually take that and make it work. The idea of what they were trying to do with robot babies and all sorts of fun insanity that I'm sure we will talk about later.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, with episode one, I just found it didn't quite work. It felt a little long and repetitive, and it was like, okay, I get it, you're doing this ridiculous thing, there's a whole send up of reality TV in the process, sort of, but I didn't like laugh or be that interested for a lot of it either.
Okay. Right. No, I mean, again, there was a handful of, you know, the disarming comedy that he was trying to do with Kev early on, you know, was kind of like, it wasn't laugh out loud funny, but it's like, okay, I get it, you know, oh, I should travel with a plunger, you know, kind of thing. Or I understand what he was going for. Some might say it was more defecating humor, not deprecating humor, but you know, either way. But no, but again, for me, I'm kind of with you, Jason. I felt like there wasn't as much of that, you know, true comedy kind of routine behind it. But for me, like, the shocking thing, the fact that they recreated the Alligator Lounge entirely to that level of detail, that is what shocked the hell out of me. I'm like, I didn't realize they had that kind of budget.
Actually, you know what my favorite part of the recreation of the Alligator Lounge was? The simulated pizza oven.
That was pretty brilliant.
Yes.
They just put the dough in and then put a cooked pizza on the other side. That was the one time I legit laughed out loud during that episode.
Yeah, I was just like, wow. See, everything else is perfect, and the pizza oven is just, you know, they couldn't put a microwave, you know, just, you know, on the side and just, you know, just fake it, you know.
They kind of did similar stuff on Nathan for You. Like, the dumb Starbucks episode, you know, did involve, like, massive set pieces in terms of the fake Starbucks and a couple other random things. So it was kind of in line. But, I mean, this was a whole nother level. He's definitely, like, elevated, you know, his approach since Nathan for You, but it was similar. I'm surprised you guys like didn't find the first episode. I really liked the first one. There were a couple, I really enjoyed the awkwardness of certain scenes at some point, like some point where there were points where they just ended the conversations just super awkwardly. And that cracked me up. And I think maybe just hit the right funny bone, you know, hit my funny bone in just the right spot, but no, it's fair.
Right. No, I mean, but I think it's so interesting that, you know, I can't call them marks because this is not a con man kind of scheme here, but you know, the featured primary, as they might like to say, you know, was very interesting to see, you know, their reasons for wanting to go and go through with this, basically. And I think that they really go into, I think, in episode one, the first story. What I do like about this is that there is a bit of a full circle. You get to understand, okay, you know, his marriage ended, I guess, somewhat awkwardly as well in that regard. So maybe he didn't want to lose another relationship in his life. And it was kind of more of a idea that it was alluding to that kind of fear of loss or fear of a fear of, you know, losing another human being in his life in that regard. And I felt like that was interesting to me on a human perspective.
Fair enough.
I think it's interesting that you just referred to the real people that are in the show as marks.
Yeah.
Because I definitely got that vibe at times.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I'm sitting there going, so they're purposefully trying to make fun of these people, right? The first episode, I didn't think that was as clear. The second episode, I think it's much clearer that they're making fun of these people. I don't know how I feel about that. It sort of worked. And then other times it started to veer a little bit into mean-spiritedness that I, you know, was a little awkward for me. I don't know. You know, and then other times I'd be like, yeah, they deserve it. You know,
right,
like,
right.
No, they don't. That's terrible. But, yeah. You know, but that's reality TV for you. You just know what you see. And if they make them look ridiculous, you're like, well, you know, that's all you know. You don't know what they're like. Maybe Core Steele is a, you know, really put together guy in real life. I forget his fake wife in episodes two. And it appears this continues on for the rest of the season.
Angela. Yeah.
Angela.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're definitely making fun of Angela.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
I think she deserves it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you get to the later episodes, there's some stuff there that you begin to unpack, and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I think he mentioned the first episode he put something up on Craigslist to get these people. So again, I think that, you know, if you're pulling people from that kind of scenario, I mean, you have to understand that these are the same type of people who get roommates from Craigslist, who will buy, you know, things maybe you shouldn't buy in Craigslist from Craigslist. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, there's, you know, sometimes, you know, the people who might really need the most help might not be on that platform possibly, you know?
Mm. Yeah. And I'm sure they filter out to find the craziest people.
Yeah. Likely.
I'm sure there were plenty of totally normal people, and they're like, no, thank you. Go away. Unless you have a baby, we can totally use your baby.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, if you think about other reality shows, I'll put myself in the context to say of you know, Gordon Ramsay's Hell's Kitchen, for example. Every single season, he has certain character archetypes on the show. And like, if you go across every season, you could have columns in an Excel sheet and have seasons 1 through 20 or whatever they're on right now. And you could literally put a character's name in there and it's going to fill those archetypes.
Right.
Because they're there to create conflict indirectly. So like you put fire and gunpowder next to each other. What do you think is going to happen? Kind of thing. Oh, and by the way, you have to curse the Chinese are creating gunpowder.
That might have been my favorite of the random feeding him the answers and so indirectly.
So the tallest building.
It's like a perfect thing where you're like, what's real here? Okay. I'm willing to believe this guy is real. I'm willing to believe that this relationship is actually real and these other things are fake. But does he know that this is a bit they're filming? Or does he think they're just walking down the street and people are saying weird things to him?
He hired all those people on the street. I think the fake policemen, they're all fake. I thought
no, they're totally all like, obviously they're all fake, and but yeah, you know, Nathan Fielder put them up there, but did Core know that they were fake?
Not till later, obviously.
Like, clearly he's got a film crew following him while they film it,
right? Well, I mean, I can definitely see a situation where that is fake, right? That he knows that these people are clearly feeding him something. It doesn't make my life better to really buy into that, though, because then
if I can just ignore that, suspend my disbelief, this is an insane journey to enjoy and sit back and feel like I got my money's worth when I paid for HBO Max this month. I'm willing to do it. And that's why I think that's why I really enjoyed it, because I was like, I know this could be total BS, but let me buy into this and go on this weird, weird ride with you guys.
Yeah.
I think this is an experiment that has us, salivating like Zaslav's dog. Sorry.
I don't know. I was the whole time during the first part, I was sitting there wondering if I might have ever seen this guy, because I used to work really close to the Alligator Lounge.
No way.
Yeah. And so I don't think I ever went there, though I'd heard of it. We did go, sometimes me and my coworkers would go do trivia at another bar a couple blocks away. And apparently this guy is in like the trivia scene. So he just goes to anywhere he can go find some trivia. He's all in it. And I certainly wasn't winning these trivia contests, and he seems very invested in it. So now I'm like, was him and his posse there, like playing trivia at the same time I was? Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, you and Dally would have lost to them. They're that competitive, I think.
Apparently, he was on an episode of Cash Cab.
Like, oh, seriously?
Like, yeah.
Wild. Damn.
That is wild. So like, he's that's why I like Googled. I was like, is he a real person? He's a real person. And he's popped around in some of this trivia stuff. He was in Cash Cab. He won some trivia contest or was in some trivia contest. I don't think it was like the world trivia contests, but you know, he was in something and they're like, oh yeah, here's an actual picture of him with some of the other people they show him with. So yeah. By the way, on a side note, the bars around there are a lot of fun.
Oh, cool.
If you're ever in New York, and I'm not just speaking to you, I'm speaking to our listeners at home, you know, go to Greenpoint, go to Williamsburg, go to these little dive bars, that Alligator Lounge, that pizza oven, like that's their thing. You buy a beer, you get a free pizza.
Yep.
Oh.
No, they had another outpost actually on 14th Street in the East Village, actually, towards First Avenue.
Oh, really?
And it looked very similar. And I had been there at least two or three times at least. And what it was that we'd go there, you'd drink and you'd have things, then you would go across the street and grab a slice of artichoke pizza to get your full creamy grease stain on there. So. But yeah, I took Sherv there actually once when he was in New York. Actually, I think we were at Crocodile Lounge for a hot second.
So these are really more like fun, enjoyable dive bars as opposed to like depressing Eugene O'Neill-esque bars.
Yeah, that's what's so great about them is they look like they're going to be Eugene O'Neill, like depressing, horrible dive bars, and they're a ton of fun. The prices are cheaper than the Boston area, frankly, and you're in New York City. These places are amazing. And then they keep showing up in random TV shows. That was like the weirdest thing of when I used to work in that area and I would sometimes go out to places after work, is then I'd randomly find these shows. Like I would randomly be watching TV and some of these bars would show up. So like I used to go to a place called the Turkey's Nest that's not too far from there also. And that was the dive bar featured in Daredevil.
Oh,
yeah.
It's Hell's Kitchen. Nice. And no, it's the Turkey's Nest in Williamsburg.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know. That's good to know.
They would give you everything in a styrofoam cup. And it was, I don't know, environmentally, it was terrible. But the beer was cold and delicious.
There you go.
Now, the dive bar I used to work in Jersey City, they've had a couple of things randomly filmed there. Something with Richard Chamberlain, which probably went straight to video years ago. But I remember the owner had pictures with him and Richard Chamberlain. But that place was a trip. It was weird. But having worked an entire shift, like an entire day, I saw the really depressing stuff. Because my first shift ever, I ended up serving a guy who just spent the entire time crying because of his mother having passed away. I don't know if it happened that day or months ago, but he's sobbing at the bar. And I'm just like, another round? What do I do? And then by the time of the end of the night rolls around, the place is filled with hipsters and we're playing YouTube clips and singing karaoke. So really, really ran the gamut.
I think that's every hipster bar, though, right? Like, yeah, before 5 p.m. and after, it's a whole different world.
Oh, yeah, facts. Yeah. And that is truly why I don't miss bartending much at all.
Yeah, you go become a bartender. Well, yeah. You think your job is to go make drinks, pour beers. No. That's the easy part.
Yeah. You know, no, I have to police the guy who thinks he can bring the drink home and then walks out, and the owner's just like, whatever, he'll be back later. Okay. You literally just walked out with a full drink and left.
Yeah.
We're all okay with this? It's only my second day. So
that's wild.
That place was crazy. I love it. I started off there as a patron and then just randomly started working there, and yeah, the place was a trip.
That's wild. So wild. That's yeah. I mean, again, dive bars, like, I think I agree with you, Jason. I think there's a certain, you know, art/science to making one work. And I think that, you know, there's kind of this formula that has to exist, you know, to kind of perpetuate that.
And apparently you can recreate it and stick it in a warehouse in Portland.
Exactly. Well, like, he moved the whole thing. I'm like, yeah, I just like, yeah, again, the whole, and I really enjoyed the whole Wonka allegory that was, you know, kind of, you know, sloughed in there, you know, because like he comes to, you know, Kev here, and he like just literally, boom, he recreates the entire bar. Like, he's just like seemingly magical, you know.
I have to wonder if this is why Batgirl got canceled, to pay for this.
Yes,
because I kind of get the decision, to be honest, if that's what happens. Like, you need to save the money to pay for more of this. Yeah, I'm kind of on board.
I can't argue with that.
I mean, 80 million can go a long way, or sorry, 90 million can go a long way. So
true. I actually had one question for you guys about sort of, you know, the second episode moving forward. Do you wish, because you both have children, do you wish you had done something like this before having children?
Oh, no, you'll never have children if you do this as a drug dealer. My brother has told me, he's like, I watched your children. I'm never having children. Like, really, my children are why my brother is never having children.
That's wild.
You know, you got to hide these things from people without children, because no. It was like Robin. What did he last? Like 2 hours and he was out of there?
Yeah, he was like, I'm out.
He's just like, I'm out.
I'm like, wow.
He wasn't even going home to get his bong. He was just like, I'm done.
No. I mean, he had, I'm wondering about him, because, you know, he's like really changed. He's, you know, quoting all the, you know, Bible phrases and whatnot. And then but really when it comes down to it, he's all about that ass.
Yep.
So I have a question.
I don't
so
think he's changed at all.
If you're on Christian Mingle or any, you know, focused dating site like that, again, you can make the same, you know, you call it J-Date, whatever, Farmers Only, whatever you're talking about. Do you have a section about, like, because not every app out there is Tinder or Grindr or all those things, right? So is there a way with Christians, you know, a purity section where you basically state that, you know, you're not in this app for that ass, basically? And if so, how come that wasn't like leveraged, and how come he didn't know that ahead of time?
You would think there would be something for that, but at the same time, isn't it kind of implied that, you know, you're on, you know, if you were looking for that, we've got apps for that already. If you're on Christian Mingle, isn't the whole point you're looking for a spouse and it's presumed you wouldn't be looking for that? But clearly, this guy's you know, grift that he's got going on now.
Again, but
you know,
non-Christian. I mean, non-Jews can use J-Date, right? And the idea is that there are some people out there that have, you know, for lack of a better term, fetishes. I mean, maybe if you want to call it that, or certain you know, preferences, if you will. So maybe he has this thing where I want to find a woman who is totally Christian, all about this, but, you know, I can basically, you know, be his man Magdalene for her, so to speak. You know, I don't know.
I think he's, you know, look, he's not that old.
Right.
He was, as they said, you know, he's at least 10 years younger than her, presumably. He may be a lot of things, but he is a good looking guy. I just think this is his routine. You know, he goes out on dates with with women, and it's like an easy thing. Oh, I'm totally into you. You're great. You know, quotes all the Bible verses that he's got tattooed on himself to show his.
So were those fake tattoos?
I smashed my Scion STC at 100 miles per hour. No.
So do you think those tattoos are fake? Do you think he switches?
No, they're real. Okay, I mean, look, there are people. They like cross that line between like real and crazy. Like all this stuff with the numbers. I'm sure he is into all that too.
Mm-hmm.
But then he also is just trying to use all that to, you know, get women.
Well, again, he's a booty taker first, a Christian second, and a numerologist third. That's what it is.
You said it perfectly.
I have no idea why you need to use these numbers to start a fight with your roommate. That was that argument with the roommate made no sense to me. I was like, let Henry Rollins' nephew alone and do what he wants to do. You don't need to keep bringing up all these random numbers.
Yeah, that was wild.
Could you picture if you lived with a guy like this? You know, this guy must hear this every day. He must be losing his mind. You knew there was trouble the minute he's there talking about how there's no mayonnaise. And he's like, well, then maybe you should go buy some mayonnaise.
I know, yes. I didn't know if I should demonize the roommate for not using mayonnaise like ever, but I don't know. I just didn't know what to think about that.
I think the roommate hears a lot of things that are missing from the fridge and he should go get.
Yeah.
You know, this must be the, right. You know, Robin must be the worst roommate in America. You know, like this guy, he's a nut. He's, you know, he's high all the time. He's got three mattresses. What's he doing with his three mattresses? You know, there's something, you know, his roommate has come home and there is an orgy going on in that bedroom with all sorts of substances. And then he'll come back out and start lecturing him about how he's not a good Christian.
Yep.
That has definitely happened.
Yeah. Yeah. But remember, the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Apocrypha are okay, everybody.
It's true.
That was a really good point. It was really good to, I really took that in. That was an excellent point. Now I have to go check those out.
Yeah. and you don't need a license plate to drive, apparently, right? So.
That just got harder and better, didn't it?
Yeah. Really escalated so well. My God.
I loved also, like, you only got a snippet of him, but the quote unquote night owl talking about the government. Government hired Sasquatch liaisons. That was wild.
See, I'm gonna guess that one was fake because we know that guy. That guy's got to be an actor. I feel like everything with the Night Owl guy is fake. I don't know. That's my hypothesis: is that he's fake and his shtick is fake. But Robin and I'm blanking on her name again. Alicia?
Angela.
My theory is Robin and Angela, they're definitely real, but I think Night Owl guy might be fake. But who knows? That's this show. You don't know.
There's a lot of weird scenes.
Reality and fakeness.
Yeah. I think Angela might be on Cameo. And there was a point when this was originally being broadcast, because I caught it, I think when maybe the second episode was out and they were only releasing an episode a week. And she was recording video messages and sending them out to people, and which was strange. And being kind of positive about the show, possibly because she had to be because of various contracts. But I was surprised she was still actively doing that, considering how she is portrayed on the show, which she has to be. I don't know how much self-awareness she truly has.
I was going to say, I don't think she necessarily thinks she comes across that poorly. It's not like they're regularly making fun of her. They're just letting her talk. And, you know, look, we're different people. We're literally a Jew, a Hindu, and an atheist talking about this, you know, evangelical Christians, even by evangelical Christian standards, sort of out to the left field. And so to us, it's sort of a given. We're like, okay, this doesn't make any sense to us. And, you know, we hear essential oils and rubbing lavender on feet. And I'm like, okay, good luck with that. But, you know, they don't sit there and rip into it. They don't like pull on people talking about how stupid that is. They just are like, that's her. Okay. So she may not feel like people were making fun of her because in a sense they kind of didn't.
Right. And if they did, it was only God's hand guiding them, which was one of my favorite points of episode two, where they just catch her talking. Maybe could have been scripted, whatever, but it was just so brilliant. Yep. And it almost felt like that could have potentially been scripted, because it kind of works within the context of the show, kind of messing with people, where she's talking about how let them know, God, put your hand heavy on this production. Let them know that they're not the ones doing this, but you're the one guiding them. And then, I mean, that could just be their way of being like, yeah, can you guys just pretend that this is all happening normally? We didn't script any of this. I don't know. Could have been a wink.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I know some people who are fairly religious, and I don't think that's unusual at all. That seems sort of in character if you believe that sort of thing.
Right. So, yeah. And that's the other thing, that I've definitely met folks like that too. So it could definitely be completely, you know, completely straight. She could have been playing that straight the whole time and just randomly talking to herself and saying these things so the camera could hear. But I think on the other hand, it could have been a wink. Like, I think it could really go either way in my mind. But I definitely am choosing to believe that that was just her being real
off
and dropping some knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, don't drop that knowledge like you drop a crucifix, right?
Right.
You know, there's one thing we haven't talked about yet. We have not talked about the robot baby.
Yes, robot baby. Yeah, we have to talk about the robot baby.
Like, that just comes out of left field, right? I mean, first of all, we're already like established that it's totally okay to swap out babies with no warning.
I was like
that second episode,
you off the episode. Going on.
Right? You just walk into a room and swap babies, and you're like, what just happened here? And that's the thing that I think really worked, particularly in the second episode, is just crazy things like that where they're like, we now have a robot baby to create the accurate experience of what it's like to parent during the night.
The first shot of the episode, you know, when they go in, they're taking the baby out. I'm like, are they rehearsing a baby snatching? I'm like, what is going on here? I was like, what the hell? Yeah, it was wild. But I understand, you know, because they wanted to kind of, you know, mimic that. And again, I understand the whole, you know, legality between employing minors, the whole, I get that as well. But I'm like, wow, in order to do all of this, they had like the shot clock above the living room there, you know, make sure no one was overworking. It was wild.
But yeah, that, again, I don't know what other shows they canceled to pay for the robot baby, but I mean, probably a couple. Like,
yeah.
And yeah, I'm with you, like with how jarring that was, because I rewatched it today just to refresh my memory, and I was like, wow, that really comes out of nowhere, especially in the context of having watched the entire series.
Yeah, no, totally. Again, you definitely see all that kind of play out, and it's pretty wild how that works out.
So, Dan, since you finished it, I want to ask Jason: are you going to continue watching this?
Yes, I think I will finish this season for sure. Yeah. I'm curious where this goes. I've already seen three. We've had some excitement in Raising Cane's, and there's literal treasure hunting in three.
Oh my gosh.
A furtive journey through an amusement park looking for funnel cake. You know, you just never know what to expect on this show.
And
I'm really curious to see what interesting people they find in later episodes, and also what crazy scenarios they are able to come up with.
So Angela didn't go on and do her Etsy shop then, right?
I don't know, but that's worth the Google.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
There's got to be someone. Someone out there must have totally looked this up and actually like researched all of it. Maybe that'll be us. We'll follow up with an article.
We're like the 17th person. Or no, and it has to be a special significant number. Like, we're the 88th person to Google that.
There's numbers everywhere. They're everywhere.
Patrick cleaned grandpa's ass. Okay? I'm just throwing it out there. He did it. Again, defecating humor.
All right.
So, would you guys recommend this show to other people? It sounds like it's a yes, but I want to reconfirm, because this is a very confusing show.
I, Yeah, that's a good question, man.
I would say I would have to know who I'm recommending to. I think for the right type of person, this is a huge thumbs up. I think for certain people, you know, maybe this wouldn't be their cup of tea and they'd be very bored and lost and think I have no idea what I'm talking about when I recommend this. But I think for the right person, if you're into just totally absurdist, ridiculous things, this is the greatest thing ever.
That's true.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, Jason, I think I do agree with your approach. I think that the people out there, and I'm, again, no offense to certain people who like certain IPs out there. There's certain people out there that say they want less talky-talky and more punchy-punchy. Those type of people you will not recommend this show to.
Oh, basically. Yeah.
You need somebody who is going to understand certain like nuance aspects of this, the hugely meta kind of that the show takes things to, right? And like you have to have the right kind of thinking, you know, watching cap or viewing cap when you're tuning into this, for sure, I think.
So is this like the opposite of the people who like Marvel shows? And I say this as someone who generally likes Marvel shows, but like there are people out there who watched WandaVision and thought it was a little too experimental.
Yes, exactly.
This would maybe not be their cup of tea.
Yeah, again, if you are into more punchy-punchy and less talky-talky, then definitely do not watch the show. But if you want something, it's like you said, Jason says, this is original as hell. You know, I'm sorry, Angela, I said hell. But you know,
are you we're coming up on Halloween, Dan. Are you gonna be doing ritual sacrifices
here? You can be Batman's mommy. I almost did a spit take when he said, when the kid said that. I'm like, oh, Adam,
oh my god.
Again, in episode 3, Jason, you get a taste of what's to come in later episodes vis-a-vis that whole discussion there. So it definitely is a good kind of a harbinger of things to come.
So essentially, great for folks who are into this sort of thing, but if you'd rather watch The Fast and the Furious for the 35th time, just go do that. Don't waste your time.
That sounds about right.
That movie's also about family.
fair. Like that is the one common thread. That's what the show is missing, Vin Diesel.
Exactly. Yeah. See, I think they should have had Vin Diesel do the, like the voiceover work for like somebody in the show, basically.
The robot baby.
The robot baby. There you go.
Voiced by Vin Diesel.
Voiced by Vin Diesel. The baby just says, "I am Groot." Oh man. Oh, but yeah, again, there were also some other wild things that they did. Digital mirrors in episode 3 that they had were pretty wild. How they aged him up like live. It was towards the end of the episode, basically. The very end of the episode.
I didn't rewatch 3, so I'm not.
Yeah.
This isn't really available. But
I also saw that the fake family album looked like very photoshopped.
Oh, yeah. That I remember. Yeah.
I definitely enjoyed it, you know, and I think that, you know, I'm glad I watched it again because of the budget. Like, again, they have to cancel another, you know, 3 DC films to do season 2, I think. I don't know.
Just don't touch Doom Patrol. That's all I ask.
I know. That's all I want them to not touch. And, you know, I mean, again, supposedly the Green Lantern show is still happening and I'm still waiting for it.
We'll see how that goes. I'm curious, but God, Doom Patrol is so good.
Agreed. And Brendan Fraser is a natural treasure.
That is true.
So that's what we thought.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today and hope you join us next week for another exercise in utility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.